Well, happy Thursday. Hope you have had a good week thus far and a long weekend to come. Labor Day weekend is straight ahead. And whether you're going to be sticking around this area or taking off for a couple, 3 days to enjoy some time off with family and friends, hope it's enjoyable for you. In the meantime, welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. And before we get underway, a reminder, you're always invited to be a part of the festivities via phone and email. 414-1234 is the local number in the greater Tallahassee metro area. If it's long distance from you to us, it's 800-926-8809. Email perspectives at WFSU.org, and you can tweet us at WFSU Perspective. For the past several years, there's been a great event out in northwest Florida on the mighty Apalachicola River, which we talk about so much on this station, particularly in our news coverage of what's going on with the Flint, Chattahoochee, Apalachicola River Basin and the interstate water wars and all of that kind of thing. So this is an opportunity to talk about a gentler side of the Apalachicola when it comes to not only its ecological significance, but also what it brings to this area insofar as recreation is concerned. And an event that is happening, which is kind of recreative in nature, but also is building awareness and also some financial support for efforts to conserve what is got to be one of the most magnificent resources when it comes to America's waterways that I can certainly think of. So we're going to talk about the upcoming Apalachicola River Trek and everything that's connected with that. And thanks to our good buddy Georgia Ackerman, who is a cyclist and a paddler, because both are going to be in play during this upcoming river trek. We've got a phenomenal panel together. So first, thank you, Georgia, for doing this. I appreciate a bunch.
Thank you for having us. We're happy to be here.
Okay. Well, right next to you, we have an old friend, too, and that is Dan Tonsmere, Apalachicola River Keeper. 15 years you're celebrating now, Dan, right?
Yes, sir. That's 15 years of protecting the Apalachicola River and Bay best we can with the help from thousands of volunteers and hardworking folks.
And to keep that resource viable and functioning, and Lord knows there's been enough controversy and contention about that particular body of water. We can talk a little bit about that as we get into this whole thing today. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
We say hi to Elizabeth Swyman, who garnered nearly 50 sponsors so far, raising over $2,000 for the River Trek campaign and all. Anyone who's gone into fundraising knows that that can be worse than pulling teeth. How did you get that much money into this particular effort, Elizabeth? General persuasion, a 38, what?
General persuasion, a little sarcasm, and reaching out to my friends and asking them that of course, we are looking for large amounts of money and small amounts of money, and it's not how much you give, but that you give at all, and that you're protecting something that I love and that we all love in the area.
Well, you not only have to give money, but if you're going to be involved in a river trek, you got to give some sweat, too. And a man who's going to be doing a lot of that is John Moran, who is a paddler, born and raised in Florida's capital city, grew up seine fishing and cast netting in Franklin and Wakulla. You have been connected to this entire water thing almost since birth, right, John?
Yes, sir. My family were recreational seine netters when I was a young tyke along the coast, and they'd drag all sorts of sea creatures out and gave me a real education as a young naturalist, so I'm excited to be participating.
Talk about some of the changes, though, that you have seen in the past couple of years. We have heard about the near collapse of the Apalachicola Bay because of, first, the infusion of fresh water, which really messed up what was going on with the oyster population there, but is it as bad as some folks have said?
Well, I think Dan could speak to that better than I can. I haven't seen all the changes because I've been working on my graduate studies in California, but the sort of deterioration of the ecological conditions is one of the things that actually called me back, and I think has called other people back to the area. It's really been a wake-up call to think more about what we can do for the panhandle.
Okay. George Ackerman, talk about the history here of the Apalachicola River Trek, though. We're just, a bunch of folks got together who love kayaking and paddling and said, hey, let's just go from Chattahoochee to Apalachicola. It'll be fun.
It is fun. I don't deny that. It is incredibly fun. It's incredibly eye-opening, and it's incredibly educational from the moment that you leave the shore and get in your boat and realize you're going to paddle 107 or more miles. You actually paddle a little bit more because we're moving around the water. But really seeing the river up and close, and then we bring in speakers to educate the paddlers and be able to ask questions and learn more about the different plants and creatures that we see out there. We learn the history of the river. So it's very fun. There's a lot of camaraderie that gets built when you spend 5 days out in the wilderness with a group of people that you may know a little bit, but you don't know very well. So there's a lot of wonderful things that happen there. And then, of course, everything that they've done up till that time has involved fundraising and awareness campaigning, like John and Elizabeth are both participating in, to help increase the knowledge about the river and its ecosystem, and as well as the important work that Apalachicola Riverkeeper does. So we've been doing this, I believe, about 8 or 9 years now, and it just keeps growing and growing and getting more wonderful and wonderful, and the people are terrific.
Well, you talked about how it's been growing, but also it is now diversifying, because you can be a landlubber totally and participate in River Trek this year. You don't have to touch a paddle if you don't want to.
It's true. It's true, and a couple weirdos in the group are going to do both, and that'll be Doug Alderson and myself. But Rick Zelsnack is our cycling coordinator this year, and he's an avid cyclist, and he enjoys paddling and is participated in the track before and has been a longtime member of Apalachicola Riverkeeper, but he really likes to ride his bike, and he has long said that it would be a great way for people to experience the river basin, the area along the river, and learn about it as well, and we should consider a cycling component. So we said, well, let's pilot it. So this year we'll have a small group, 6 to 8 cyclists, doing a 2-day ride. It's a little over 100 miles, and they'll be meeting up with the paddlers at Owl Creek at Hickory Landing, and we're going to have a great time. Yeah.
Is there actually a trail that parallels the Apalachicola, or is this you get out the machete and you just start hacking away here?
There will be paved and off-road trails, and so Rick and some other volunteers are mapping that out, and they'll be revealing to the team actually in the next 2 days, the people that have agreed to do this, what that looks like. Rick and I spent time in the last couple of weeks out down in the ANF, and as well as at the top of the river looking at roadways and where we'll be exploring, and it was very exciting. We saw 4 venomous snakes in the first, 2 hours out in the woods.
Oh,
it's going to be fantastic. We're really excited. So, yeah.
Look at that python. That's so pretty.
You do get up close and personal with all the plants and wildlife out on the river. So that's the good stuff.
Well, this is sort of interesting, though. This adds another dimension to the entire thing. And Dan, as far as Riverkeeper is concerned, do you look upon that as an asset, as a supplement to what you have as far as the waterborne transportational possibilities of the Apalachicola, to have folks actually maybe someday being able to cycle a real nice trail alongside the river from Chattahoochee to Apalachicola or wherever?
Oh, absolutely. The Apalachicola River itself is beautiful, but you get out into the fringes along the river, it is incredible what you can experience there. As Georgia pointed out, our snake friends are there, but the wildlife, the birds, it's just fantastic, everything that you'll see. And any way that you can get into, close to, around the river, all that brings awareness and support for protection. And so it's all helps pull folks together and give them an avenue to experience the river, which is always good.
Well, we forget, with our emphasis now on Apalachicola Bay oysters and things like the River Trek, that at one time the Apalachicola was a major water route for commercial entities. There was heavy-duty barge traffic on that waterway for many years.
Absolutely correct. You know, what we – and Josh sort of pointed it out, I think, is what we've seen over time is a decline in our ecosystem. Some of the productivity and habitats have been severely impacted by some of those activities that we've had in the past. But what we're finding is that you can do a lot of these things if you do them in the right way, without impacting the resource, and still provide the economic value to the area. The commercial barge traffic is one of those examples. They used to try to dredge 1 million cubic yards a year out of the river. There's not dredging anymore, but there is accommodation for some moderate snagging so that those barges and recreational traffic can make it up the river safely without having a catastrophe on their hands.
Which is where all that sand comes from in different parts of the river there. People think, where this these giant piles of sand is really from the river bottom.
Right, exactly. And we actually started a study. The Fish and Wildlife Commission actually funded a study of what we call a fluvial geomorphic study that looks at changes that have occurred in the river, you know, its meander pattern, its cross section, the profile of the river, how much it slopes, to try to see how different activities on the river may have impacted the connection of the main river to the floodplain. It's such an important piece of the how the ecosystem functions that floodplain is hydrated by the river. So that fluvial geomorphic study, I'm picking on everybody now because they tease me about that word. But
I like it, geomorphic fluvial study.
So it's going to give us some really good information. We're primarily looking at mussel habitat impacts right now because that's a main issue for the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission in terms of what they are focused on the river, to see how some of these sort of real wild meanders that have become dramatic here in the last 10 to 15 years are impacting the different habitats on the river.
Yeah, and hold that thought here, Georgia. We're coming up on a break real soon. We want to be able to talk about not only the current health of the Apalachicola River Basin, because that's always been a huge angle of discussion here over the past probably quarter century since we've been in the whole Tri-State River Wars, but also some more information about the actual upcoming Apalachicola River Trek and bike trek, I guess we could say, too, huh, Georgia? Right here on Perspectives, 414-1234, the local number if you want to call, or 800-926-8809. We shall be right back. Come October 6th, we'll be way down upon the Apalachicola, far, far away, for the annual Apalachicola River Trek and now Bike Fest, a new component to that annual excursion down the mighty Apalachicola River is what we're talking about here on WFSU-FM's Perspectives today. And George Ackerman, you were going to jump in there right before we went to break.
Well, Dan and I always go back and forth because he gets really excited about the science, which is very important. So I'm never poking fun of the science. I because I have the shorter attention span, I'm always asking him, well, explain it to me in three sentences so I can help make sense. And plus, I like to be able to take, you know, explain to any of the trekkers, so I need small bits of information. But, you know, we want to know, you know, what can we learn from mussels? What do mussels tell us about what's going on with the river? The dredging that occurred, one of the first things that the paddlers who, if they've not experienced the river for many days at a time, you get out there, and the first thing you start to see are these slats of wood and things that have been put up on the river, and almost immediately somebody will ask me, well, why is that there? What is that from? And then we spend time talking about how the river was, you know, there was an attempt to tame the river, if you will, and for commercial traffic. So what you don't want a river that meanders a lot. You want a nice, neat, and tidy, straight river. And we talk about the impacts that that's had, and that's all connected to the the muscle science and study that Dan is talking about. So it's really fascinating. And even if you don't have a science background, you'll get very excited about it once you spend some time on the water. Elizabeth does have a science background, so I'm really excited that she's on this trip this year. And
I'll
John,
start studying.
Yeah, and John is engaged in his doctoral work. So we have a really eager group that will be out there asking really hard questions this year.
Yeah, but also having the capability of for paddlers and bikers who say, what's that? Just for you guys to have the resources to say, okay, well, here is not only what it is, but what it does or how it connects to other things along the river shore or in the basin itself or whatever. So having that capability, it's kind of like an outdoor classroom, John, maybe?
Yeah, indeed. And some of our paddlers, like Jim McClellan, who's written a book called Life Along the Apalachicola, grew up in the region and holds a lot of knowledge that isn't just institutionalized, but are things he's learned over the years that his parents and grandparents learned over the years. And so it's a real resource.
Okay. Elizabeth, from your angle then.
I'm really excited to be able to spend so much time with such a diverse group of individuals that are going to bring different aspects of river life to our conversations. You know, we have ecologists. We have people working in the field. We have people who grew up along the water. We have authors. We have artists and naturalists. And so I think I'm excited for the questions that we're going to pose to each other, and I'm really excited for the conversations that are going to come from those questions and how we're going to learn from each other and then be able to share that with our friends and our colleagues when we come back. And having that breadth and depth of knowledge is one of the reasons I'm so excited to spend 5 days on the water with this team.
Or maybe I'm thinking, Dan, sociologists also and historians, because every time you have a river or any kind of body of water, it has a particular impact on the people who gravitate to that, whether they're making it a way to get a living, like the oyster folks in actually the Apalachicola Bay area, or further up the river. How did that contribute to the development of places like Chattahoochee and all that sort of thing, which might not have been there had it not been for the river?
Absolutely. John and I were talking about this before we started here, and it is really defines us, because so much of the population either makes their living or has their recreation, or it's a social part of their culture, being close to the river and the bay. You know, whether you're harvesting oysters or harvesting timber out of the floodplain or fishing or, you know, commercial recreational fishing or just visiting the river to clear your head, you know, it is really formative experiences for us and defines who we are, what we are. And whether you're new to the river or whether you've been here for five generations, it engages you and endears the river to you, and you feel compelled to help protect it.
Well, to the phones we go on Perspectives. Paul's been very patiently awaiting on line one. Thank you so much for calling, Paul. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, I've got a small slew of nature lover questions. How long will the trip be for the canoers? Will they be camping out? What kind of wildlife do they hope to see? Are there designated camping areas? Let me know what you think. I want to see it through their description a little bit.
Oh, terrific. Hey, thanks, Paul. A lot of questions here, and I'm sure we've got a lot of answers. Where do we want to start here, guys?
The first place I want Paul to go to is apalachicolariverkeeper.org, and there'll be a link to the Blue Way trails on there with the Apalachicola Blue Way, which is a designated state paddling trail with the state of Florida.
So, and national.
And national. It's a designated scenic waterway, so we're really excited about that. Yes, we will be camping for 5 days, predominantly sandbar camping. It's 5 days of paddling, a little over 20 miles per day. The one established campground will be on the last day of the trek, and that is at Hickory Landing, Owl Creek. I would encourage everybody to explore that stretch of our wonderful wilderness at some point. Fort Gadsden is one of my favorite places to take paddlers. Just if you can't paddle there, but you can, because if you go to apalachicolariverkeeper.org, you'll learn about our fourth Saturday paddles. We sponsor a community paddle every month with our volunteers, and that's a popular place for us to go. So, again, lots of history. With regard to the what critters will we see, we hope to see it all. That's why we go out there. There are you name it, we'll get to see it out there, and that's part of the fun of the exploration.
Well, that is one of the more ecologically diverse places, I think, in all of Florida, isn't it?
Actually, North America. The Apalachicola River has the highest documented biodiversity of any river system in North America. The Apalachicola Bay is one of the most productive estuaries in the Northern Hemisphere. So it's not a unknown or unrecognized resource. It is a national treasure, literally, for us. And that's been recognized by the UN, the U.S. Congress, for a number of designations that have been put over the resource.
Well, not only that, but it, if you're into geology or just topography, we have our own version of the Palisades. You don't have to go to the Hudson River to see them. You can go to the Apalachicola. We have bluffs, and you don't have those anywhere else in this area.
Absolutely correct. And it is such a unique resource. I mean, and I guess what you want to grasp is that we cannot take this resource for granted, as special as it is. We hear all about the Everglades all the time, about what an important national resource it is. The Apalachicola is no less. Senator Graham is actually trying to work with us to help nationalize the issue so it gets much broader attention brought to bear upon all these issues that we're dealing with now. So it is a very unique and special resource, Tom.
Well, a senator was dad, but Congresswoman Graham is his daughter, and she's I think she has some pending legislation now trying to effect some kind of a amicable settlement amongst Florida and Georgia and Alabama when it comes to the whole Apalachicola and Chattahoochee and Flint River system into which that all feeds, to try to come up with something so that the states will stop yelling and screaming at each other about this thing.
Absolutely. She's followed right into her father's footsteps as a champion. You know, Governor Graham 30 years ago was the champion for the Apalachicola and has been ever since, and she has picked up the gauntlet. And with this legislation, I think it gives us an opportunity to direct the Corps of Engineers to look at the Apalachicola as just as an important piece of their management, which they don't right now, to meet the needs of our resources as well as those in Georgia and Alabama. And her legislation is critical to doing that, and we're working with her and Senator Nelson and Senator Rubio to try to help get that legislation passed.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking about the upcoming Apalachicola River Trek here on Perspectives. And a reminder that you can always find the program online at WFSU.org. You just go to WFSU.org, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and click Perspectives. We archive past shows and trying to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs. Mike is online, too. Let's go to him next on Perspectives. Hey, Mike.
Hey, I've had the pleasure of being on the Apalachicola twice in the last month, putting in the Highway 20 landing at Bristol and going upstream from there. Let me tell you, it is absolutely magnificent. It is also not only a thing of beauty, but a thing of history. We're coming up on the 200th anniversary of the Battle at Ochese Landing, I believe before this was part of the United States. And I had a question. Above Bristol, there are 10 or 12 stone groins coming out from the eastern bank, and I wondered if anybody knows who built them, why they're there, what their purpose was.
If I know what you're referring to, those are called dike fields that the Corps of Engineers built for part of the navigation channel maintenance. And the purpose that they serve is to narrow the river, which increases the velocity through a particular reach. And their objective was to have the sand in those reaches carried through that reach so they wouldn't have to dredge it and have it going downstream. I won't get into a discussion of some of the fallacies that we felt like there was in that in those engineering discussions. But it does work to narrow a river by putting in those groins will increase the velocity. It also increases the erosion on the opposite bank in a lot of cases because of the additional scour, because of the higher velocity. And but it does work to move the sand down through that reach.
I would be curious to ask Mike if he made it up to Alum Bluff and was able to check out any of that area, because that's truly spectacular. Alum Bluff is about 135 feet above of water, if I'm not mistaken, but it is Florida's largest exposed crust of the earth. So a beautiful hiking trail if you're interested in overlooking the river from the trail. You can go to the Garden of Eden Trail. And check that out online. The Nature Conservancy helps oversee that, and that's it's a very beautiful hiking trail, probably the most arduous hiking trail in the state, I'd argue. Elizabeth is shaking her head yes. So we're just going to say it is. It's the most arduous hiking trail.
Okay. Have you been out there, Mike, if you're still on?
Yeah, I've been to the head of the trail. I haven't been on the trail.
You
but
should
I've been
check
up
the
river twice recently, and it is just spectacular. I mean, it's gorgeous.
It sure is.
Yeah, well, I always loved crossing the Apalachicola on Highway 20, the old Highway 20 bridge rather than the I-10 structure, because you just sort of blink your eyes on I-10 and you're over and you really don't see too much. But the run-up from Bristol over, you know, across the river on the Highway 20 bridge always struck me as being, you know, a more picturesque way of seeing the basin.
Well, I saw that bridge from the underneath last weekend. I was in a canoe with a motor on it, and we went down and under and around, and it's another perspective from there as well. But every time you're on the river, it's a different river because the light's different or the weather's different or the time of day is different, but it's beautiful every time.
And since you said that, Mike, I'm really curious to know, did you see the sandbar across from Alum Bluff? I'm wondering how that was looking.
the river is very down now. I'm not sure that I could tell you which sandbar, but there are sandbars, well, on the inside of every curve.
Part of the fun of being the captain of the River Track Paddlers, which I'm not this year, is telling the group, yeah, well, there's a sandbar right down there. We'll be able to camp. There's plenty of room for everybody. And you're not really sure if it is because, just like Mike said, it does change. And while we look at the conditions continually, things do change and we have to adapt. And this is part of Mother Nature's lesson for us. So if you've got 15 people in kayaks behind you and you get up in front, you realize, oh, there's about room for 5 people to camp there. You're whispering in your captain's, co-captain's ear going, we got to find another sandbar because they're not going to fit. And so that's part of the joy of being on the river too. But the first morning, the night one, they will camp across from Alum Bluff. And I can tell you, in all my years of paddling and other recreational sports, it's one of the most glorious spots on the planet to wake up and look out at that bluff and start your coffee and just spend some time enjoying what's about to come. Beautiful place.
Oh, I love the description there. Thanks so much, Georgie. Appreciate that. Maria's online, too. Let's get her involved in the conversation. Hi, Maria.
Yes, good morning. Sending a shout-out to everyone. Tom, love your show. Listen to it all the time.
Thank you.
I have a question. I'm an educator, and there is a lot of, you know, the whole thing with the STEM, the science, the technology, engineering, and math. And I'm just thinking that this is probably a very teachable moment where young people can get involved with, you know, the different things that you guys are talking about today. So my question, has anyone on the panel actually worked with any of the schools, try to get kids interested in coming out for field trips and just seeing everything firsthand?
Oh, great question. Thank you, Maria. Well, I know Riverkeeper does, Dan. You do a lot of educational outreach as part of that.
Yeah, we haven't done that much in terms of taking kids in large canoe or kayak trips just because of the logistics of it. But we have the 4th Saturday paddle, as Georgia mentioned earlier, and everyone's welcome to go on that. And certainly I would be glad to work with any educators that want to try to do those trips, but it's quite an effort to either do it during school times – where we have taken some classrooms out to, you know, do different monitoring and just experience and educate them a little bit. But it gets to be a big deal when you have to get bus drivers and teachers swapping schedules so that a class can go out during school. But if you would like to contact me at the office there, we can certainly talk about trying to do some river trips with most any age, down to a certain age.
Yeah. Okay. And Elizabeth, I mean, you direct the sustainability effort, and you've been very much, involved with that at Florida State University. So that's another potential there, too.
Right. So I would say, as one educator to another, I think an opportunity like this is really helpful in that the river is accessible to so many people, so many different ways, and we know that students of all ages get interested in science when they can get their feet wet and their hands dirty, and you can really just put your hands in the mud at the edge of the river and just look at what's there. It could be a full-fledged field trip. It could be a day at the river with your family. It could be water you bring into your classroom and put under a microscope. And I think the more we allow our students in any educational setting to really touch the things that are right around us, it really fosters that process of inquiry. And that's how they fall in love, not just with science, but with the nature that is around us. And one of the reasons I'm doing this trip in particular is, as an educator who does a lot of outreach to a very specific age group, college-age students, this is an opportunity for me to show my students what advocacy looks like, something that I'm very passionate about, but don't get to do every single day because of the work that I do and sitting at my desk. And so this is an opportunity for me to go back in the field and touch and play the things that brought me that original joy and inquiry, and then be able to come back and say, this was super fun. This is an educational opportunity for everybody. And this is how we do it in an everyday setting.
Okay. We're talking about the upcoming Apalachicola River Trek, which is October 6th. Actually, a couple days. We'll have people paddling. We'll have people pedaling. And we'll have some more folks asking about what the ins and outs of that event are, and also what life along the Apalachicola River is today. And maybe, John Moran, what it was like years ago. We'll talk about that more when Perspectives continues on WFSU-FM. Well, anyone who ever read, and I think we all had to as part of our required reading at some point in our education, the works of Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, Life on the Mississippi, what it was like for Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn and all that kind of thing. Well, we have our own, I guess, analogous waterway, which is the Apalachicola. We have the same part of the world, which is the American South. And although it doesn't have the same water volume or width as the mighty Mississippi, the Apalachicola certainly changed history as far as the northern part of Florida and up into Alabama and Georgia was concerned. So, John Moran, you were very, very much into that area. How did that waterway and that whole area kind of determine who you are today?
Well, I grew up in Tallahassee, so I don't know if I can speak directly for people growing up in Apalachicola, but I think an excellent resource to see the history of the town, again, speaking to youth education, is the Apalachicola Maritime Museum in Apalachicola. It's a really world-class museum, in my opinion.
But as you go in, and you're in Stanford right now, and you're doing all kinds of studies which relate to that whole part of the world, even though you're in Northern California right now. But you kind of pull all those things together. Again, the impact of that river system on the people and the history of the entire region. And so that's part of what you're doing now.
As an anthropologist, I'm trying to chronicle the cultural and natural heritage of our area. And living in California, where you see the drought, it really helps you to realize how unique the relations we have with the Apalachicola is, because over there, as people tussle about the Delta smelt, an endangered species in the San Joaquin Sacramento Delta, there's a real disconnect between people and their labor and the environment. And business interests and environmental interests are often in opposition. But here we have something totally unique, I think, and increasingly rare on a global scale, which is people whose lives and communities and their community health depends so intimately on the waterway. And so, like many anthropologists performing sort of during the colonial period, who would go up and down rivers being guided by wise elders, I'll have that opportunity too, but my mentors will be Tallahassee state workers by day and panhandle shamans by night. So.
Oh, I like that. Okay. And Dan Tonsmere at noon for lunch, presumably. But yeah, go ahead, George.
I wanted to point out, because we're talking about the educational opportunities that the river brings to us in the river basin and the bay, regardless of our age, because we're always learning. We are always learning. We should be always learning. But I wanted to mention that WFSU has some fabulous educational videos that can be accessed that probably we can post somehow. But those are videos that we've used that the Ecology Blog has put out, Rob Diaz de Villegas produces. And we've used those to educate policymakers. We've used those in classrooms. We've used those with other outreach efforts. So there's a lot of good information out there, and we should always be learning.
Well, thank you for the plug. I appreciate that, George Ackerman. But speaking of policy, Brandon is on line three, and I think he's going to weigh in that direction. Hey, Brandon.
Hey there. I just wanted to say that I know the River Trek folks are going to pass the old Schultz power plant along their paddle, and I wanted to say congratulations with that recent litigation. It really illustrates, I think, the importance of a watchdog group like Apalachicola Riverkeeper.
Well, thank you for the shout-out, Brandon. And Dan Tonsmere, bring us up to date. What was the nature of that lawsuit and the fact that it was successful?
Thanks for calling in, Brandon. Yes, we settled our litigation with the Schultz plant, which is owned by Gulf Power. They actually were not aware that the impoundments that were holding their coal ash was leaking this contaminated effluent into the river, literally arsenic, chromium, some very serious toxics were leaking out of the bottom of the ash pond into the river. They were meeting all of their permit criteria, which brought to light for us and a number of other entities that the permitting system for these coal ash ponds that what EPA has promulgated is very weak, both at the federal and at the state level. And so we have to do a better job at having these permitting conditions, the monitoring requirements, pick up the levels of contamination that are coming out of these ponds and really do a better job of how the effluent is managed from them. But Brandon and friend Zach Farrell were good enough to be our standing witnesses in that case. And Tommy Williams, another old-timer from the Bluntstown area, stood up for us as you have to have standing witnesses in those cases. And so they're an inspiration to everybody to being good for the fight when you need to go to the fight.
So with the lawsuit now won, what happens?
They're actually going to move that pond, the effluent, back away from the river and put it in a much more well-contained area. So chances of any leakage is very, very small from what they're doing, and I'd say nil, really, if it's all successful. But we're going to keep working with Gulf Power and make sure it all comes off well.
Well, yeah, you not only have some potential threats that are coming from things like old coal-fired power plant ash depositories, but sometimes you can have threats that are coming from way across the Gulf. Bring us up to date on something that's been going on with, I think, a leaking oil well that's hundreds of miles away from the Apalachicola Bay.
Yeah, that's another one. The Taylor Energy Company had 28 wells off the coast of the mouth of the Mississippi River, and a hurricane came in and created a big landslide and covered them up, and a number of them were leaking. But one has been leaking for over 10 years now, and we finally had to take them to litigation because they would not tell us what they're doing. They were literally underestimating the amount of oil that was leaking into the Gulf. They were saying it was maybe 2 or 3 gallons to when it was really more like 400 gallons a day. And so the impacts to us by the our fisheries that migrate over there and back, you know, can be very much affected by those types of leaks from these wells. And the industry in general does a very poor job of managing their mess, as I like to refer to it. And so we're looking closely at this moratorium to work again with Representative Graham to help extend that moratorium on any wells out in the Gulf, because we just do not need that type of industry impacting our tourism, our heritage, and our fisheries here.
Well, Elizabeth Swamin, that's a part of your bailiwick, too, is to talk about how things that are not in our own backyard that can be hundreds, perhaps thousands of miles away can have an impact. And when you're out on a body of water like the Apalachicola, you see how everything impacts everything.
Right. I think in my work especially, we always talk about where is a way and where is our stuff going? What are we being impacted by? And I think this is a really unique opportunity to be surrounded by what we think is a way and how everything fits together and how we're impacting something hundreds, thousands of miles away can impact our lives here. And so it's a really important lesson for us to think not just locally but scaling outwards and really thinking about the interconnectedness of us and our natural resources and how we depend on each other.
Yeah, the butterfly in Burma whose little flapping wings suddenly create a hurricane off the coast of Tampa. You know, George Ackerman, we've been talking so much about, though, the upcoming Apalachicola River Trek on October 6th, and people probably want to, gee, is it already full up? Is there any way to get involved, even if we can't go? Or what are some of the back things on
that?
Thank
you for asking. The team, if you will, is selected early in the year in spring, typically March, April. Doug Alderson and I have been coordinating the trek as volunteers for several years now, and like I mentioned, Rick Zelsnack has joined us on the bike coordinating and is doing a stellar job. So people apply. They fill out an application. They give references. They talk about their outdoor experience and their fundraising abilities. And we truly get a nice, diverse cross-section of people, some very experienced paddlers, some not. Everybody gets to know each other. We've got people from different parts of Florida this year. Jason Foltz is joining us from Gainesville this year. And we've had people from out of state before, too. So all that to say, a great group of folks that want to learn about the river, want to share the news about the river, and really put time and effort into this. It's a lot of fun once we get on the water. It's a lot of work before we get on the water. And they're laughing at me because I'm always hounding them. How's the fundraising going, guys? How's it going?
It's not just the fundraising. It's the training. It's the learning how to pack your boat.
Oh, yes.
How to get in and out of the boat when it's full.
Right. Jim McClellan was telling me recently, he's a paddler coming in from Pensacola. It's like it's backpacking, but you're doing it in a kayak. So you're jamming all that gear in your boats and figuring out where's the most logical place. Now, bike camping is even more exciting. Now, imagine you're going to put all that gear and stuff it on your bike somewhere. They have a shorter voyage. They have a 2-day journey, but it's exciting, too. So the logistical work is fun for most of us. If it wasn't fun, they probably wouldn't be jumping in to some extent. Right, Elizabeth?
Sure. Yes. Fun. Nothing but fun.
Well, you're going to have the fun shared with, some significant policymakers, too. Specifically, mm-hmm. One House District 7 Representative Halsey Bashirs. You told me last night Georgia is going to be biking it with you guys.
Correct. That was kind of late-breaking news. Mr. Bashirs expressed interest in, as you know, he owns Bird Leg Bicycle in town. But he contacted Rick and asked how he wanted to support the trek. He's a supportive Apalachicola Riverkeeper. Dan knows him well. And so Rick invited him, yes, please come experience your district in this manner. And so we're really excited that he's going to join us for the bike part of the trek and is very enthusiastic. So we're honored.
Well, speaking of significant policymakers, we have one on line one who is an old friend of, I think, just about everyone at this table and one of the preeminent outdoor enthusiasts of Florida's capital city, Leon County Commissioner Brian Deloge. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Tom. How are y'all?
Hey.
I wanted to call and just thank Georgia, Dan, Doug, all the people that have kind of continued to drive this. I mean, I think Apalachicola River is kind of a national treasure, and I think it's in our backyard, and so many people around here haven't had a chance to get out there and experience it. It is unbelievable, and I think the work that Georgia and Doug and Dan and everybody does is really great at helping get the word out, and I just wanted to call and say thanks. It's a great piece of our community, of our area, that I think a lot of people hear about, talk about, drive over occasionally on the way to Apalachicola, but have never really spent much time on it. And what y'all are doing is a great way to educate everybody and kind of spread the word. So thank you.
We will miss you this year on the water, Brian, but I will take pictures of the copperheads and send them your way.
Snake population.
Commissioner DeLoge is a skilled snake hunter by accident. He just finds them, or they find him. But we've had some exciting venomous snake adventures with Brian DeLoge.
And thank you for all y'all have done, really, and continue to do. It's a great, great event, and sounds like the bike piece will be a nice addition for it as well this year.
That's going to be great. And Brian, now that you are in a national high profile position as far as your responsibilities there with the National County Commissioners Association here, you can bring more information and awareness about the Apalachicola and other goodies we got in this area to a much wider audience.
Absolutely. I'm on the road a lot these days, but I tell people all the time there's no place like home. It's the greatest place in the world to come home to. And the Apalachicola River is one of those things. And Tall Timbers, which George is affiliated with, some of the groups, the things that are in our community are really spectacular. I think we, as a community, could do a better job of promoting all the things that we have out there. And there are people like Georgia that spend the majority of their time kind of coordinating this stuff, and Doug Alderson, who lives for the rivers, and Dan, who drives a riverkeeper. So it's people like that that make the difference.
Well, you too, Brian, and we sure appreciate your input, and we know you are a busy guy. We will touch base in a bit because I want to find out what's going on here with your new position there.
Absolutely.
With the National.
Be happy to talk to you. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Well, that he just brought up a good point, I think, Dan Townsend, in that we do not have yet, I think, the danger of overpopulation in the basin, or where you would get like the Disney effect from Central Florida, where you have tens of thousands of visitors a day just flooding the shores of the Apalachicola and floating down, and where you have congestion on the riverway. We're not there yet, right?
Correct. We're a long way from there, and in fact, I think we are working actively to try to increase the visitation and the awareness. Josh mentioned the Apalachicola Maritime Museum. They're trying to put in a historic riverboat tour up the Apalachicola into South Georgia. That will be a really great opportunity for people to see the river. But what we'd like is for the tours and the awareness of setting up how people go from point A to point B, so it's not such a challenge to figure out how to do this. And that's part of what River Trek does.
I'd like to compliment the folks at Office of Greenways and Trails, specifically Doug Alderson and Liz Sparks, who work so hard on our greenways and trail system throughout the state, because they do fine work, and we have some really spectacular trails that we get to share with people that other states don't have, that haven't done that kind of work, and they partner well with other organizations and just do a really nice job.
Some of the recent conservation purchases on the river have secured almost a continuous public lands route from Chattahoochee to Bristol. So part of what Doug has been working on is trying to build that hiking trail or bike trail all the way from Aspalaga Landing down to Bristol. So you can hike or bike or as your choice. And working with the Nature Conservancy, Terea State Park, you can almost do the entire thing now. Without getting off public lands.
I was just thinking of the since you were talking about and John with the Maritime Museum in Apalachicola down in the R.A. Gray building, which is now being rebuilt, you have that replica of the old Florida, North Florida riverboat. And I'm thinking if some entrepreneurial spirit could do those river tours using modern replicas of that.
That would be cool.
Which
I volunteer. We'll do it.
Would that not be awesome to go, I mean, from Apalachicola up to whether it's, you know, Bristol or Chattahoochee or wherever, and then turn around and come back down again?
I liked Dan's point about just the amount of public lands that the river is encompassed by, if I'm using the proper terminology. The Apalachicola National Forest is the largest national forest in the state of Florida. A lot of people don't know that, and the river travels through that area, and exploring it is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, the river is pretty much lined with public lands. The Water Management District owns 35,000 acres down between mile 50 and 20. The Fish and Wildlife Commission manages land for the states in the lower basin all through the floodplain and that. So it's quite a opportunity to visit public lands or experience the river through the public lands, I should say.
Folks, what a great conversation. This has been just a real delight. John Moran and Elizabeth Swyman and, of course, Dan Townsmere and George Ackerman. Thank you guys for coming on, and have a wonderful Apalachicola River Trek coming up October 6th, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls doing their wonderful work back behind the glass today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Hey, next week on Perspectives, a salute and tribute to grandparents who nowadays are busier and more important than ever. That's coming up next week right here on Perspectives. Have a great week.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.